Hello, hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to another episode of the Daily Friend Show. I am your host, Nicholas Lorimer, today joined by Sarah Gon. Sarah, how are you doing?
Hi. Well, thank you. A little breezy out there.
Indeed. It's actually quite pleasant to sort of wash away some of the smog of Joburg after a long, dry winter. I'm actually quite enjoying the wind. We were hoping to be joined today by our colleague, Herman Pretorius, but he's a little bit under the weather. So it'll just be the two of us today. So let's get into the news. And I think the first thing to talk about is the ongoing resistance to the National Health Insurance Scheme and to government's plans to sort of, absorb everyone into its social compact so it can kind of force them to all accept NHI. The presidency held a presidential health compact signing ceremony where they were supposed to have major stakeholders from across the medical industry there to sort of endorse a plan to work together with government to change the healthcare system in South Africa for the better. But this was boycotted by a majority of the big stakeholders from the Business Unity South Africa, the South African Medical Association, South African Health Professionals Collaboration, all of which represent significant numbers of doctors and medical businesses and such, refused to attend the signing of this health compact. A spokesperson for one of these groups said, "We're not surprised because we've learned something about this government. You would recall in the past the voices of the profession were ignored, and after that the consequences were disastrous. We support and we've been part of the presidential health compact because it talks about objectives we support regarding health system strengthening, revitalizing infrastructure, and equitable distribution of resources. But now, when you keep referencing the NHI and forcing us to directly, indirectly support the NHI, it's when we've decided to say no because we must separate the two. The compact and the NHI are two different things. We wanted to support the compact on its own and not the NHI because in its current form, we don't agree with it." Spokespeople for all of the various groups roundly criticized this health compact as saying that it was trying to basically get them to agree with things they certainly did not agree with. Now, the presidency, President Ramaphosa didn't attend the signing ceremony himself. He sent Paul Mashatile, the deputy president, and they sort of just seemed to kind of gloss over the fact that most of the big players weren't actually there to sign the compact. Mashatile said, "Our experience in COVID-19 shows how we can deepen public-private partnerships with greater collaboration. The resources and capabilities of both public and private sector can be brought to bear to serve those who need healthcare the most. With NHI Act now signed into law, it is even more urgent that we work together." Sarah, let me start with this, which is, you know, there's something kind of desperate, I think, about the way the government seems to be going about NHI now. They've suffered some court defeats on the Certificate of Need. They've faced much stiffer opposition from civil society once the bill was actually signed into law. A bit late, but better late than never. And now, you know, they don't have the secure number of votes that they might want in Parliament, even with the help of the GNU, because I doubt the DA or the Freedom Front Plus is going to support any efforts to kind of pass another NHI or something like that. So the government strategy now seems to just kind of be to sort of shuffle everyone along into agreeing with NHI in principle and then sort of working out the details later. I don't know. What do you make of this?
I think it's quite an interesting political scenario because Cyril Ramaphosa was dealt a bit of a blow with signing this act into law before the election. I mean, it went down like a lead balloon. Now, with health, you kind of think at the very least it would be neutral. Most people would see anything mentioning health to be positive. And I think the problem is a whole lot of people saw either the medical aids upon which they're very reliant or hope to be very reliant upon one day disappearing before their eyes with no confidence that the ANC would do what was necessary to improve health with something that they haven't costed, that they would be totally in charge of. And the beauty of the compact right now is it's been signed by people whose money is not involved. I mean, these are mostly trade unions who have members in the public sector, and they sort of NGOs that support healthcare for all, etc. But the people who are actually going to make it happen, who are the medical professionals, the doctors, in particular, general practitioners and specialists, plus big business, whose skills and money is going to be needed to make anything work, are not there. And I think there was another miscalculation with Cyril here, and I think it's some of the tricksy side in that, you know, the business sector said we'll come on board even more on areas where we've given help to the government in the last year, crime, ESCOM, etc., transport, infrastructure. And I think he kind of assumed that he could, like, throw open the NHI and just have it sort of the compact agreed to while everyone was in a good mood. Well, the business sector showed that it wasn't in a good mood for everything, particularly as its expertise and its possible future, particularly those who run medical aids, and people who pay to benefit from the positives that are coming out of private healthcare, were not in the same mood, and they've hit back. So it's a bit like the government hasn't quite felt its way through what having 40% of the electorate vote for you has meant, and that is that you can't merrily trip along and hope that everyone's going to come on board because we've got this kumbaya feeling of a GNU, which is really a coalition of sorts. It's not a real unity.
Exactly.
So I think all this does is look kind of, I don't know, I think it looks kind of silly.
I think you've exactly hit the nail on the head there, that there's sort of this kind of inability to recognize why business is so much happier with government all of a sudden. And that's very simply because the ANC made a choice, which was to avoid going into coalition with the MK and EFF. And because it now has parties like the DA in government, who business thinks will produce much better policies, at least potentially down the line. It's not just that, you know, the ANC decided to suddenly be more friendly and now everyone's on board and therefore they can keep doing what they like. But actually, you know, this goodwill is only going to last if actual changes take place. Mm. And, you know, we're seeing that, I think, really here, which is that you can't just kind of blunder on as you had originally planned. You know, NHI turned out, as you pointed out, not to be a vote winner. In fact, you know, when it was announced very shortly afterwards, the ANC actually saw a bit of a drop in their polling. The messaging didn't land on that. The costing doesn't make sense. Business and civil society are increasingly fighting it. So, yes, it is signed into law. But actually implementing the thing and fighting off all the core challenges is completely a different issue now. And I think sooner or later, government is going to have to realize that compromising on this issue somewhat is the only way forward. Otherwise, NHI is going to be even more of a disaster than many people suspect, because it's just going to get kind of jammed into the gears of government.
Yeah. Well, I think what this particularly signifies is they didn't have to. You know, all they had to say, I mean, Ramaphosa said he'd been kind of convinced by the business sector that fixing the hospitals and doing the basics that would be necessary for the NHI to succeed anyway, but it would also be necessary just to get better health care provided, would be the desirable and necessary thing. So why didn't they just say, well, you know, support programs to improve hospitals and improve staffing and improve management? I mean, it's really, you know, it really seems no point. It wasn't necessary, I don't think.
This is exactly what continues to frustrate me so much about this debate. As the government says, we need NHI to get universal healthcare. We have universal healthcare. Our public system it's not entirely free, but it's pretty close to. The problem is it just sucks. That's why, you know, suddenly the idea is to go and plunder the resources of the private sector, because apparently the only problem with the public sector is underfunding. But as we shall very shortly see, it is not only an underfunding problem with the public sector. So let's quickly go to the case of Babita Deokran, of course, the famous whistleblower who was murdered for speaking out about corruption at Tembisa Hospital. Well, the Special Investigating Unit has announced that the amount of corruption and misappropriated funds at Tembisa Hospital is much greater than originally believed. When Babita Deokran blew the whistle about irregular payments and theft of money from that hospital. It was alleged to be somewhere, I think, between 850 million and a billion rands in corruption. Well, the Special Investigating Unit says that it may in fact be as high as 3 billion rand from just that one hospital in terms of corruption, inflated prices, things stolen. The SIU, the Special Investigating Unit, has placed Tembisa Hospital at the center of a complex extraction scheme which relied on pliant hospital officials who engineered the awarding of thousands of contracts, according to reporting by News 24. At the same time, Babita Deokrans' family has continued to express their outrage that the true mastermind behind Babita's murder has not been brought to justice. Only the hitmen have appeared in court. And the officials who are the prime suspects in perhaps having hired said hitmen to pull the trigger continue to walk free. Indeed, the CFO of the Gauteng Health CFO is still on suspension and still going through a disciplinary hearing all this time later. Sara, this is kind of, you know, the NHI would be a state-owned enterprise which directs money, and this is what's happening to the money that's already in the public system. I mean, it kind of, the point proves itself.
Well, I mean, it's exactly it. I mean, who'd have thunk, you know, you've got Tembisa. It cannot be the only hospital. It may be on a particularly big and effective scale with lots of little front companies funneling money backwards and forwards and this way and that. But when you take the very fact that they've said they're no closer to solving the murder of Deokaran, the amount thought to have been stolen is more than double what was initially what's initially been worked upon. And now we want to funnel all our health spending, all our taxation and all our concentration to central government, to be the provider of healthcare and to manage the funds in an incredibly complex system. What could possibly go wrong? I think it's just, you know, it's for this very sort of reason, with the sort of lack of progress and the sheer scale of it, and presuming that a whole lot of this is happening right across the board is very likely. And also to go back to Paul Mashatile's comment about how well we worked together during COVID. Well, yes, we did, but the corruption in COVID.
There was also lots of looting.
Yes, exactly. So, I mean, you know, comparing doing anything to how we did it in COVID is really a waste of breath.
No, exactly. So, yeah, no, obviously we'll continue speaking out about NHI, but I encourage everyone to, and also put pressure on your medical aides, because I think some of them are beginning to wake up, but some of them also are still thinking about how maybe they can be cut into the government's plans on NHI, which them selling out the healthcare system for their own benefit is, I think, just not cricket. So, yeah, we can't let that slide. Okay. Let's move on to South Africa's foreign policy a little bit. And here we're going to be talking about the South African Development Community. This is the sort of customs union and political military alliance of the countries in Southern Africa. And it's supposed to be a forum for encouraging trade between countries in Southern Africa. It's supposed to be a place where you know, there's development of democratic institutions and systems. But in many ways, SADC is kind of an embarrassing example of all the worst things with South African foreign policy. So currently, recently, the SADC conference was held earlier this month in Zimbabwe, of all places, with Zimbabwe chairing it. Of course, SADC did not criticize Zimbabwe's incredibly bad human rights record, despite the fact that something like 80 activists were rounded up by the government of Emmerson Mnangagwa in Zimbabwe just, I believe, a week or two before the conference was supposed to take place. The crime of the people, the 80 opposition and civil society activists who were rounded up by the Zimbabwe government, was that they had a meeting with the leader for the main opposition party that was deemed to be unsanctioned, he was holding a meeting at his house to celebrate the International Day of the African Child, at which point the government swooped in on them and arrested 80 of them. And of course, SADC, no condemnation of this, nothing. The issues around democracy and instability in Eswatini, formerly Swaziland, which remains an entirely undemocratic state, essentially an absolute monarchy, were on the agenda. But then the king of Eswatini requested that they be removed from the agenda, and they were. So I guess, you know, what's the point of even bringing them up then? Instead, all we got out of SADC's conference was waffle about pan-African multicultural facility and how wonderful they all were for holding peaceful elections, and how the sanctions on Zimbabwe were bad. And this really is just such a stain on South Africa, which should be the big dog in the area, should be the one that's encouraging democratic systems and development in these countries. And instead, just gives excuses and provides cover for the autocracies around us. What do you make of this, Sarah?
Well, it's very much in keeping. It's like of all the areas that the ANC has blind spots on, their foreign policy seems to have a certain blind spot all of its own. I mean, it's almost like, you know, there's been much talk about them reinventing the revolution. I mean, you know, the eternal revolution that will go on until, I don't know, Jesus comes or something. And yet, in many respects, you know, there have been a number of things that have developed since the election that, from a democratic point of view, would be positive. The GNU generally, with a fair number of caveats, the fact that the ANC conceded the election, conceded the result, and there was that's not inconsiderable. So who do they support? They support guys as awful as Mnangagwa, the president of Zimbabwe, whose post Mugabe rule has been appalling. The Zimbabweans are dirt poor. It's a lovely way for them to celebrate the International Day of the African Child by ensuring that the African child knows that his or her rights in the future are likely to be further diminished, spending huge amounts of money on the vanity project of holding these damn meetings with little roads to all the right sort of places and boreholes for the conference delegates. But God forbid the people of Zimbabwe should actually benefit. So, I mean, if I were King Swati, I would say, look, take me off the agenda. You know, foreign policy is about being good to the bad guys, and go on and be good to us. And they've done it. I mean, the relationship between South Africa and Iran, forget any other relationships, but that is a good one to illustrate just how morally bereft the ANC is. That revolution, if somebody's committed a revolution, it's a good thing, even if it's a bad revolution, even if it brought the theocratic rights-hating mullahs into authority in Iran for the past 40 years. It doesn't matter. As long as there was a revolution, there isn't a revolution that the ANC won't support. It doesn't matter how bad it is for the people who have to suffer under the results of a revolution. And it seems to be a blind spot that will probably only really change once there is genuinely and either the baton has been passed on within the ANC to a younger generation that isn't so, this place may be a little more pragmatic, but that's certainly mixed messages. I mean, Lamola is, on the one hand, he's lauded this our relationship with Iran. On the other hand, he has said we kind of have to improve relationships, presumably with the West, for the benefit of South Africa and of trade. Well, you know, you can do a lot of things with diplomacy, but you can't have absolutely everything you want at the same time.
Right. You can't just smooth talk your way through the fact that, you know, you're speaking nicely to everyone. You actually have to, on some issues, either completely excuse yourself or choose a side. You can't kind of just go and say, oh no, we love autocracy and we love democracy and we're everybody's friend. Doesn't work like that. The ANC's foreign policy is like a kind of a dysfunctional machine where no matter what the input is, the output is West bad. That's about as complicated as it gets. It's just kind of shocking that, okay, you know, there's many arguments for why we shouldn't be getting involved in these foreign arguments and battles over, you know, Taiwan or the Middle East or whatever. But SADC, these are countries that are right next to us. Their stability affects us very directly. I mean, after all, partly the issue of illegal immigration is driven by the fact that Zimbabwe remains such an enormous basket case. The same with Mozambique to a certain degree, and the same with Lesotho and Eswatini, which the bad governance and dysfunctional governments in all of those places are contributing to the massive number of people who are desperate to come to South Africa for opportunities. And well, the ANC, on one hand, will complain about, you know, all these Zimbabweans coming here and causing unemployment, but then at the same time, they will prop up the very government that is driving Zimbabweans out of that country because they literally can't afford food.
Yeah. Well, you see, it's exactly, I mean, SADC, as I understand it, is meant to be above all about trade. And trade is about, you know, for trade to improve and to work to the benefits of the people within the larger entity, it actually is about, to some extent, it's about democracy. To some extent, it's about exercising. I mean, South Africa does have a certain level of leverage just by virtue of being South African and because of the size of the market and the ability to provide what our sort of neighboring countries may need. But, you know, when you really are more than just quiet, you actually effectively condone poor governance. But poor governance and the inability to create economies that are worth anything go hand in hand. So nothing changes. People, as you say, still come across our borders, whether it be Mozambique, whether it be Zimbabwe, whatever it may be. And trade gets sort of hoisted on the petard of by the petard of the sort of revolutionary zeal of covering up for each other. I'm not quite sure, you know, sometimes I just wonder why we bother. We're always going to be hamstrung. Our ability to trade and grow the economy of the SADC region is always going to be compromised by our tolerance of dictatorships.
Exactly. Because at the end of the day, dictatorships tend to not produce very good economic outcomes. You know, you can't really entirely have one without the other. Okay, let's move on to our last story. And this is about, you know, ongoing troubles in Joburg. We had the new mayor of Joburg, Dado Marrero, saying in an interview this week that, you know, we really shouldn't expect much to change. He only had 2 years to fix the city. And, you know, he was just kind of beyond his power to do anything before the election to actually improve things. And also, basically, the only place where there were problems were the ANC supporting areas. And so that was going to be his focus. But be that as it may, we have a great example of Joburg's continuing mismanagement with the street which blew up a while ago in Johannesburg. Lilian and Gorney Street, I think, which is sort of close to Bree Street in the center of Joburg. More than a year ago, it exploded, probably due to some kind of unvented trapped gas, possibly from some of the old mine networks around there. Sounds like me after I've eaten a lot of beans. But and the Johannesburg Roads Agency put out a tender to repair the street and to improve it so there would be more space for hawkers, more space to vent gas from underground. So hopefully something like this would never happen. The tender was awarded to a company called Step Up Engineering, and work was set to begin on the repairs in January of 2024. Supposed to be completed by the 15th of December of 2024. That doesn't look like it's going to be happening anytime soon. And in fact, the city of Joburg says that it is cancelling its contract with Step Up Engineering, saying that it's already paid them more than 17 million rand. has got 2 million rand, another 1.5 million rand that's going to be given to them, but they are terminating the contract, quote, due to poor performance and failure to meet contractual deliverables. In response, Step Up Engineering has admitted that they received a termination notice, but said that it was invalid and that they would continue working at the site. The company said, simply put, the termination is unfounded and opportunistic at best. On the advice of our attorneys, we cannot divulge certain information, but we can confirm that the challenges you inquired about are directly attributable to a lack of planning and implementation by the JRA. For instance, their inability to pay the contractor, make decisions on technical matters and budget constraints, which have hampered effective construction solutions. What makes matters worse is that people speaking to the media have said that this company, Step Up Engineering, has a history of poor performance and, in fact, was implemented in a number of corruption scandals in Ekurhuleni and Johannesburg dating back to at least 2017. So why they got the contract in the first place is a mystery. Sarah, this is kind of a microcosm of just how Joburg has been run into the ground. What do you make of this story?
Well, you know, I've been rethinking. I think we should give the new mayor some credit for being honest, if not particularly ambitious or inspirational. Nothing's really going to happen in the next two years. I mean, how, in the face of ceasing to be the majority party, how the ANC, you know, can literally somehow. Proper tender processes are always followed, and the same guys get the tenders. And I think that JRA is probably at least right up to a point about the work that. Why would a company that's complained that the JR doesn't pay on time insist that the termination of the contract isn't valid, so they're going to carry on working anyway? I mean, who in their right mind will carry on working? Complaining about the people they're working for who haven't paid them. I mean, at least, you know, if they're going to be honest crooks, you know, complain about not being paid and stop working if they were doing any work. So it's this has all the makings of a sort of comedy routine that I haven't scripted yet, but certainly worthy of it. But I think there's another problem with Moreira's view on, you know, sort of targeting ANC dominated areas. Lillian Ngoye Street and Bree Street are not where the majority of ANC voters vote or live, but it is a part of the city they use and rely on, particularly when you've got the Bree Street taxi rank literally just adjacent, and you've had these huge disruptions to the operation of the rank and coming into and out of town for the people whose vote you want in other areas. I mean, we could probably say the same about the parliamentary precinct, although, you know, it's again, you know, we've done a lot, but on the one hand, on the other hand, we've achieved very little. So it's really one of those things where unless there is a significant, you know, to the extent that the DA can act as a sort of counterfoil in national government and the business sector can be a counterfoil in the NHI, you know, we've got a special brand of ANC sort of inertia. I mean, all this hoo-ha about changing the mayor. I mean, why? Could have kept quiet and, you know, no one would have been surprised that things carry on corruptly as usual.
Right. And, you know, and it's worth pointing out that the ANC is in a lot of trouble in Johannesburg. They got only about 32% of the vote in the 2024 election. And national elections are traditionally when the ANC does a lot better, actually. So in the next local government election, they're looking at sub 30% of the vote in Johannesburg, unless the GNU has revived their fortunes. The DA would only need to grow by about 2 or 3% in that scenario to actually overtake the ANC in the city of Johannesburg to become the biggest party. So, I mean, who knows what's going to happen? We're still a ways out from the local government election, but it's clear that the ANC doesn't seem to have much of a plan for how they're actually going to win back votes. I mean, it seems entirely like their strategy right now is to kind of just hope that their collective coalition with other, you know, with the sort of EFF and MK and all these other parties maybe can put them over the 50% line. It's kind of fascinating to watch the inertia.
Yeah, well, I think the problem with for the national ANC not to have played a sort of more shall we say, instructive role in Gauteng governance and in Joburg city governance, means that the richest city, the most populous province, where the wealth still is in the country that you rely on to pay for everything else in the country, is essentially business as usual, a la municipal politics and the Panels and the Sufis of the world. It doesn't kind of make sense if you're hoping that the next 5 years you'll somehow retain your existence. So maybe, you know, there's no logic to it, but then I guess logic isn't the currency of governance in this part of the world.
No. But we'll see. I mean, you know, we've got a slightly new dispensation in Johannesburg. I wonder if it'll make any sort of difference. I'm skeptical, but we'll see whether Dada Marrero can actually, contrary to his own proclamations of not being able to do much, can achieve something. Would be nice for our country's biggest city to, you know, not be run into the ground. At least Kabelo Gomanda isn't the mayor anymore, although he remains an MMC, the MMC of Community Development, which is kind of just straight up insulting to the voters of the city.
He remains
anyway in government. Exactly. If you're in that department, my condolences to you. Anyway, thank you very much, everyone. We hope that you had an interesting time listening to us today, and we'll be back on Monday. I hope you all have a wonderful weekend. Cheers, everyone.